The content of the following broadcast is offered as is. It confers no rights or warranties. The opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants and may not reflect those of the Microsoft Corporation, its partners, friends, and family. Welcome to IT Heroes. And now here's your host, Michael J. Murphy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another installment of IT Heroes, Stories from the Trenches. These are the stories of the men and women in IT that are making a difference every day. I'm your host. My name is Michael Murphy, and I'm very excited. With me today, we have Jay Brummett. Jay is from Product Support Services for Microsoft down in Dallas. Let me tell you, this cat, he knows things that I'll never know. And he is, when we talk about the guys that are out there on the front lines, in the trenches, doing the dirty work every day, bringing up crash servers, fixing the problems, making this stuff work, this guy is one of those guys. So I'm very pleased to welcome Jay. Jay, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody. How you doing? Thanks for having me on today, Michael.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's really great to have you here. I'll tell you, Jay, I'm pretty lucky. I've had the opportunity to work with Jay before, and I know one day we were talking about the kinds of calls that come into product support services, and we were talking about the customer frustration. You know, you get a customer on the phone, they feel like they've got a problem, they feel like they've exhausted every research tool, every website trying to find the answer to that problem. They feel like they're all alone in the world, and then they call you up and you say, well, heck, everybody has that problem, or I see that problem all the time. Right, Jay?
Yeah, we get those calls all the time. And, the one thing we have to explain is that, hey, I've been doing this one specific thing for 5 years. That's the reason I see this. It's not common for everybody else. You know, I show them how to fix it, and I have to explain, though, that I have seen it, and explain also why the issue happens, because I like to train the people while I'm also helping fix their issue.
And what's your product specialty, Jay? What area have you worked in for the last 5 years?
I'm in the networking specialty. I've specialized in ISA Server, ISA Server 2000, ISA Server 2004. I also did the beta work on Live Communication Server, did all the training here for that, took the first calls, and Live Communication Server 2005.
Okay, now, I have no idea what ISA is. I have no idea what Live Communication Server is. So what is ISA Server? What is Live Communication Server? What do these things do?
ISA Server is a Microsoft firewall product, similar to a PIX, similar to...
Well, wait a minute. A PIX is hardware, isn't it?
Well, actually, most firewalls are hardware. I mean, it sits on a computer. That computer's hardware. The PIX, the ISA server, they all have software running inside of them. That's what people don't seem to understand.
Okay, what do you mean by that exactly? Can you clarify that a little bit? Because my understanding is that a lot of the firewalls that are out there are hardware devices. They're network appliances, right? They plug in between your network and that connection out to the world, to the internet. While ISA is a software firewall that runs on top of Windows Server 2000, 2003.
But ISA still can connect directly out to the internet and work exactly like a regular firewall does. It's going to work down at the physical layer, blocking traffic, just like a PIX will. And a PIX is, they're both devices. ISA sits on what you just see as a normal computer. Any other third-party hardware firewall just sits in a rack mount type thing, but it's basically just a processor. It's just another computer in there, and it's got its own OS, but it's just got an OS written specifically for the firewall on it.
Okay, and what's a Live Communication Server?
Live Communication Server is a really nice product. It's relatively new. It's a SIP server. That's Session Initiation Protocol.
That's instant messaging?
Well, no, SIP's open standard. It's an application layer protocol. Basically, it starts the sessions. So it's almost like HTTP, but then you can write applications that will ride on top of this. So it includes messaging. There are some voice over IP products. There's some video products. And it also has a lot to do with presence. That's when you have, let's say, Exchange and LCS in the same environment, that's when you can see, hey, I just got an email from this person, and they're here, and they're online. Let me send them a message to ask them a question instead of, you know, sending another email that's going to sit on the server.
So live communication does that. It integrates communication software.
Exactly.
Right on. Okay, groovy. So we had a conversation not that long ago, and it really opened my eyes to something that I had previously been unaware of. We were talking about a problem with IP configurations in multi-homed machines.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, the discussion was around, I have a box, it's got three NIC cards in it, and all those NIC cards are configured with IP addresses, subnet masks, and default gateways, and I'm having communication issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you explain to me why I'm having communication issues in such a case, and what the remediation is?
Yeah, in this situation, this is a Microsoft routing situation. Microsoft uses, it's a universal route table, so the route table goes off all the network cards.
So the routing table, right, what tells the machine the path to take to communicate with other machines on the network is universal to the machine, not specific to the NIC.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And so what's the implication of that?
The implication of that is if you have multiple default gateways, you can't determine which network card traffic's going to leave from.
So the practical upshot is if I've got a multi-homed machine, I only assign a default gateway to one of those cards, and the others I leave empty.
Yes, and then if you have any networks behind, typically they would be internal networks. If you have those attached to one of the segments that doesn't have a default gateway, if there's more network segments behind there, you would want to add static routes. And a good way to do this is you can actually just write up a script, because it's just the route add command.
Mm-hmm.
You can just write up a script, so any other servers, you can go add these same routes to it just through like a batch file.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So that's a good example, I think, of a common misconfiguration that folks struggle with and they need a solution to. What other kinds of common misconfigurations do you see, or other kinds of problems do you see that are not well documented, or that maybe most folks might not encounter?
I've got a good example.
What's a good one?
Now, this isn't as common these days, but a few years ago it used to be one of the most common things, probably one in every 10 calls. DNS. When people are going from NT4 to 2000 or 2003, they don't understand the big changes in DNS. And DNS in 2000 and 2003 is the most important component you have. Without DNS, nothing's going to work.
Why is that?
Because you've got SRV records now. With the SRV records, there are resource records. That's how we're going to find our resources, our domain controller, our global catalog server, our PDC emulator. That's
so,
where we're going to find everything we need to log into the domain and to find out about our domain.
So the reality is that when you make the move to Active Directory, regardless of where you're coming from, you're going to be Active Directory in order to serve those services onto the network, like authentication requests. You're going to need DNS in order to contact those authentication servers.
Yes, you are.
Right on. And that process is facilitated through the use of SRV records, or service records, in DNS?
Exactly.
How are those service records populated into DNS?
They're populated. The servers will dynamically update these records. You just go into DNS and say, allow dynamic updates. You tell your server, do dynamic updates. And it's the net logon service that actually does the SRV records. People assume they can do, let's say, ipconfig flush DNS, ipconfig register DNS. That's just registering your host records. If you actually want to re-register or re-register your SRV records, you actually stop the netlogon service, you delete two files, netlogon.dnb and netlogon.dns, you restart the netlogon service, and that re-registers for you. But the biggest problem we see with DNS is that people actually would point the DNS server out to their ISP. Now, to make it really work, the DNS server needs to point to itself, the first server you bring up, and then you can just set up what's called a forwarder out to your ISP that'll just kind of speed things up, with your DNS server.
Okay, so there's a couple things in that answer and in that question. There is the question of Active Directory dependency on DNS. I've got to have DNS installed on one of my own machines, and that machine should point to itself as its primary DNS server. The clients should all query that internal DNS server in order to find internal resources.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That server can be configured with a forwarder so that I can get resolution on the internet for my clients as well as internal resolution, right?
Yep.
Groovy. Now, you mentioned the deletion of two files. Where are those files found? Are they in System32 DNS?
Oh, you're killing me. I always do search. I'm lazy, I have to admit. The netlogon.dns and .dnb, I really do. I always do a search on them because they're kind of buried in there.
Right on.
Just lazy.
Right on. And what's suppose I wanted to know whether or not my service records have been successfully registered in DNS. Is there a command line I could run?
The best thing you could do is you actually want to load on the support tools. Those are under, you put in your server disk, and it's under support and then tools.
Adminpack.msi?
No, there's support tools.
Oh, this is a separate tool set?
Yeah, it's called support tools. It's actually on the server disk,
okay.
And it's support and then tools, and there's like an installer. And there's a tool in there called netdiag.
Right on.
So once you install these tools, you can run netdiag. You've got netdiag, you can run it, just netdiag. It will run, and it'll kind of give some very basic network stuff. Hey, we passed DNS, we passed WINS. You can actually, though, to troubleshoot an issue, and this is something very common when you call into the network support team here, you'll run a netdiag with a /v, and then you'll pipe that out to a text file. Piping out to a text file is going to use the greater than sign and then, you know, test.txt. Or
what's the V parameter for?
That's just telling it to pipe it out to a text file.
Output to. Okay.
Yeah. And you'll do that with a /v. That's verbose. That's going to give you everything that was done during the test. It's going to give you so much information you probably can't get through it all. But if you look at that and the event logs, more than likely, if you have a network problem, you'll be able to figure it out from there.
So in terms of troubleshooting DNS issues, you would recommend loading up netdiag?
Oh, most definitely.
Right on. And just to throw this out, if I wanted to know that my service records had been registered appropriately in DNS, I could always go into an NS lookup prompt, right? Do an ls-t srv, and then the domain name specification, and I could just pull up all of the service records that had been registered, right?
Sure.
Right on. So there's a couple of troubleshooting tips on DNS. Hey, is it worth mentioning the changes between DNS in 2000 and 2003?
There's some nice things in there. There's conditional forwarders, which is really nice. Because now, let's say you have two different trees in a forest. The namespace is not the same. In the past, what would you have to do? You'd have to do zone transfers over.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have some way or forward back and forth just between these two servers.
Right.
Now you could actually forward these out to the internet and say, anything going to this domain, send over to this DNS server.
So if I'm in a partner scenario where I'm sharing resources with a close vendor or business partner, I can point my DNS to resolve requests for their resources to their DNS servers.
Yes, you could. That would speed things up. It's more typical to use it internal, though, where you have just multiple trees in a forest. That's okay. Where we see it most commonly.
Okay. What other kinds of, can you think of another example along this line of common troubleshooting, common problems that people have that you see on a regular basis, but the customers always feel like they're all alone?
Let me see. Something, well, I know not from a networking standpoint, but I know the terminal services licensing. I know there's always a lot of calls coming into the directory services team on that, but that's not my fault or their fault. They just change it all the time. That actually is a very big one. Everybody here knows about that. Now, from a networking perspective, other things that people do, people sometimes like to run too many things on a box and things that shouldn't work together. Like, we've got ISA. We were talking about that earlier. ISA listens on port 80 on its external interface. Well, so does IIS. A lot of people run a website on their ISA server, and everything will run for a while, then boom, they're dead. It's gone. ISA doesn't work.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Doesn't Microsoft make a product called Small Business Server that has ISA and web services on it all in one box?
Oh, yeah. They definitely do. And the code is different on Small Business Server than if you were to actually take a copy of Server and a copy of ISA and put them on the same server.
Oh.
And even there, that one with the web services on an ISA server, you can do it. There's actually, in 2000, it was disable socket pooling. I can't think of the command in 2004. Haven't done it today.
But is it the same practical thing you want to disable socket pooling?
Yeah, basically the same thing. And with the disable socket pooling, what you're doing is you're telling IIS to truly only listen on one interface. And if it's listening on only the internal interface, then ISA is allowed to listen on that external interface. You can publish back a web publishing rule to the internal interface of ISA. So you could publish a website on ISA and still have ISA function properly in that scenario. But you always have to remember, think about the socket pooling. And there are articles out there, if you put in disable socket pooling in 2003, you'll find the other commands for it.
Okay, but if I've got that web service published only to the internal interface, then does that mean that that website is only going to be available from internal, or is that, can that website also be made available from external?
No, I'm saying you would publish it from the external interface to the internal interface. Remember, ISA is like a router. We're saying we want traffic coming to this IP address to go to this internal IP address and then come back and look like it's that IP address on the outside of ISA.
Got it.
So we'd publish it, and we'd be able to hit that website just fine.
Excellent. Well, we are approaching the 20-minute mark pretty quickly here, so we're just about out of time. Jay, is there any last insight into, you know, dealing with customers or working at PSS that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Well, there's some things to think about. Before you call into support, make sure you've got the issue there right in front of you. They work in a queue. If you want somebody to work with you for hours and hours, you'll want to stay on the phone. So if you've got an issue, call in when the issue's happening. That's a really important thing. That's actually what holds up some of the cases here, and I know causes some frustration with our customers. But it's just a good thing. It makes it easier.
Because you're seeing it in real time with the customer, right?
Exactly. Well, and it's hard. You know, we put out 20 forest fires a day here. And if I don't have something to work on and you say, hey, my DNS is doing something wrong. Because typically if the issue's not up there in front of them, they're going to give an answer, hey, DNS is causing a problem. Well, what's the problem? Well, I don't know. I restarted it and it's working fine right now. Well, I can't do anything until the problem comes back. The real hard thing is when the problem doesn't come back for 2 weeks.
Right.
And if it comes, you know, if it's one of those problems and you know you want to call in and get support on it, I hate to say let the problem stay, let it be down, but that's the only way we can fix it is when it's broken. We can't fix anything that's working fine.
Great advice. Well, Jay, listen, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate your time and your insight here. I want to invite everybody to join us next week. We'll be back with another installment of IT Heroes, Stories from the Trenches, the men and the women making a difference in IT every day. Thank you.
IT Heroes with your host, Michael J. Murphy, was recorded at Matador Studios in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Produced and engineered by Giles Davis. Original music performed and composed by Giles Davis.